It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out of the window. Open it, tired of hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you?
You bet I cut the taxes.
How dare you? Go ahead. How make my dare.
You. The Rick Smith Show starts now. And yes, indeed, it does. This is the Rick Smith Show. It is a little bit past 9 p.m. Here on the East Coast. I'm not Rick Smith, as you might have noticed. No, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm a colleague of Rick's, and I am tickled pink to be sitting in the hosting chair, sitting in for Rick as he is called away for some activities this evening. Rick, of course, is there in Pennsylvania. I'll go ahead and be up front with you and quite candid. I'm not. No, I'm a hillbilly. In fact, I'm a hillbilly elitist. And I'm coming to you through the magic of radio remotely from wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. And I am quite tickled to be doing this because I haven't done terrestrial radio in a long, long time. I'm used to working in the wild frontier of broadcasting on the Internet. But it's nice to be going out over a beamed signal again. And so, very much excited to talk to Central Pennsylvania there, as well as the rest of the world via the miracle of the Internet. A gentle reminder for anyone who might be inclined to call in. Let's remember that because, you know, most people are used to listening to me on the Internet, on the horn, America's liberal voice. Just a reminder that we can't use the fun words now. The fun words are off limits and are a big no-no, so let's not use any of those. I hope you will enjoy these 3 hours. I know I will. And just a quick reminder as we get ready, as we proceed into the program, for those of you who might want to reach the program who are used to what I do anyway, there's a different phone number as opposed to the usual how to reach Bob kind of thing. Tonight, for reaching the program, it's 888-520-RICK. Oh, nice. 888-520-7425. 888-520-7425. But if you want to reach me via email, you can do that at bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's BOBKINCAID. Now, just to get things started this evening, I have a penchant for history. You'll find out. And I welcome your thoughts this evening on a number of topics. But like I said, I have a penchant for history, and I'd like to do a little time traveling just because of the way that the stock market ended its day today. It is as though Wall Street was sort of noting its own anniversary. Of course, one of the sharpest satirists in the United States is a good friend of mine by the name of Eugene Finneran. He's over at Finneran Works, FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. And marking today's anniversary, well, once upon a time, Eugene wrote in a publication called TheStreet.com. And he noted that today is the anniversary of the worst day in the stock market. Remember that? The heady days of 1987? I remember them. I remember them quite well. Among other things, another Bush was in the White House. This time it was George H.W. Bush, Poppy, or known better to his son W., as that guy he wanted to go mano a mano with back when W was all liquored up in his misspent youth. You might know that story. Perhaps you don't. But at any rate, it was October 19th, 1987, which was, as Eugene notes, the worst day in the stock market. He said, at the time I was a speechwriter, not at the street, he was a speechwriter at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and so a witness to a surreal day in the markets. He said, from street.com, here are my recollections of that dramatic day and its ridiculous aftermath. You know, this is the kind of stuff when you get Republican presidents and all of that voodoo economics. Hey, don't blame me for voodoo economics. That's a phrase that George Bush coined, not me. But Eugene Fetterman writes as follows. The cleric, statesman, and rogue, Abbey Sieyès, was once asked what he did during the French Revolution. He succinctly replied, I survived. In the aftermath of October 19, 1987, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange could have expressed the same grim satisfaction. By the way, as a side note, does it just seem like this stuff happens in cycles? Haven't we been here? Yes, we have. Anyway, Eugene continues, the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 508 points, or 22% that day. A panic-stricken market literally could not sell stocks fast enough. The New York Stock Exchange lacked both the technology and the nerves for the onslaught. Its stocks opened late, and throughout the day, the New York Stock Exchange stock quotes were either old or wishful thinking. Yet, at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the S&P 500 futures pit opened on time. Its traders braved a deluge of sell order, maintained a market for stock index futures. Trading volume set a record. It was twice the daily average. Frantic investors short-sold the futures, trying to protect their stock holdings against further declines. Aggressive investors also short-sold the futures. They hoped to make a profit in a collapsing market. The CME staff worked 19-hour shifts to process the transactions. By the end of that tumultuous week, a relieved Chicago Mercantile Exchange was planning a self-congratulatory T-shirt for its traders and staff. But while the worst was over, the absurd was just beginning. Someone had to be blamed for the stock market crash. The media demanded it. Of course, the obvious suspect, says Eugene Fetterman, was the New York Stock Exchange. Well, okay. My obvious... Cherchez la Republican, you know? Elderly Democrats, Eugene says, still blamed the New York Exchange for the Depression. So in a wily preemptive strike against its detractors, Wall Street proclaimed itself the unsuspecting victim of the ruthless Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The New York Stock Exchange had a rather apocalyptic interpretation of the CME action in futures that fateful week. To its mind, Henry James had been mugged by Al Capone. The selling of the future created a cascade of plunging stock prices. Machiavellian investors shorted the futures and then sold their stocks, pressuring more investors to dump their portfolios, panicking the rest of mankind to sell everything at any price. In this way, the New York Stock Exchange compared its wholesome, time-honored stocks to Chicago's venal, reckless futures. The trust funds of innocent orphans were ruined while the brutish traders of Chicago chortled. The media pandered to this narrative of the refined old New York market bludgeoned by a Neanderthal CME. Television stock footage always showed the front of the New York Stock Exchange, its facade of a classical temple. The public imagined exchange as an elegant private club amid its Edwardian decor. An Astor and a Vanderbilt might negotiate a stock price when not reminiscing about hangovers at dear old Yale. In contrast, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange had a vulgar image. Stock footage depicted a pit of frenzied traders lunging at the camera as if they could reach through the television and assault viewers. Those flailing hand signals might be amusing, but wary onlookers inferred obscene or satanic meanings. In the wake of the 87 crash, the integrity and purpose of stock index futures were attacked. The Wall Street Journal sneered at Chicago's shadow market, a blunt aspersion of the exchange's integrity. The public did not understand futures or options. Here's a hint, still don't. But it knew one thing for certain. If those markets were respectable, they would have been in New York. There's a reason Chicago is referred to as the second city. The CME was not an obliging scapegoat. It held a series of press conferences and seminars to justify the value and efficiency of the futures market. Free food was provided to entice media attendance, like free food. Confronted with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange's detailed explanation and ponderous evidence, the reporters were bored stiff. Imagine the exchange's predicament, trying to teach the Black-Scholes formula for financial derivatives to an audience of English majors. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange was asking to be hated. Having made no favorable impression on the media, the CME was driven to irrational desperation. It hired a public relations firm. The exchange thus entrusted its reputation to Flax. People who lack the stamina for journalism, the creativity for advertising, and the coordination for three-card Monty. The CME chose Hill and Knowlton, a firm famous for crisis management. In other words, Hill and Knowlton assisted the notorious, including the Teamsters and the Church of Scientology, as corporate luck would have it. The New York Stock Exchange was also a client of the New York office of Hill and Knowlton. But of course, the Chicago office of Hill and Knowlton dismissed any possible conflict of interest. Isn't it always that way in the financial world? It's funny like that, huh? According to the official history of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, Hill and Knowlton advised its hapless client to play the repentant sinner, namely by confessing to an unintentional role in the crash and making an earnest plea for more federal regulation of the futures markets. Being traders, the CME leaders knew how to cut their losses in the market. However, they were not prepared to misrepresent themselves and grovel, even if that strategy would gratify the media's prejudice. While, according to author Tamarkin, Merck officials had lost faith in the outside public relations effort, the exchange still hoped to make itself presentable to the doubting public. CME's traders generally appeared as howling slobs, but the exchange's chairman, Jack Sandner, was articulate and dapper. Taking over where Hill and Knowlton left off, CME's media department booked Sandner on national television where he could beam a congenial image of the CME across the land. This strategy was sound, but the scheduling was indiscriminate. Jack Sandner thought that he would be appearing on ABC's Nightline. There was a significant change in format, however, and Sandner found himself on a show with the Muppets. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange gave up on public relations and resigned itself to being ugly and misunderstood. It would never be as popular or as pampered as the New York Stock Exchange. But at least the Chicago Mercantile Exchange stopped being the scapegoat for the October 1987 crash. The Presidential Task Force released the Brady Commission report in January 1988, and its harshest criticism was leveled at the New York Stock Exchange. The elegant old club had succumbed to panic. As with people in a theater when someone yells fire, these sellers all ran for the exit in October, but it was large enough to accommodate only a few, the report mused. Yet the media never pilloried the New York Stock Exchange. And one can see why. With such grandeur, who needs competence? Hear, hear. And I saw that come in from Eugene earlier in the day, and I thought immediately that it would be a nice intro to what happened on this. What is the math on the fly is not my strong suit, but what is this? The 23rd anniversary of October the 19th, 1987. Yeah. From CNN Money. Stocks fell sharply Tuesday amid reports that a group of bondholders are trying to force Bank of America to repurchase bad mortgages. Investors also weighed a surprise rate hike by the Chinese government and mixed data on the housing market and corporate results. Now, it's nothing by comparison. It's no 20-25%. But in fact, the Dow Jones Industrial Average took a header to the tune of 165 points, namely 1.5% of its value today. And all but two of the blue-chip index's components were stinking up the place. Bank of America was in the lead of the losers. The S&P 500 fell 19 points. That's 1.6% of its value. The NASDAQ lost 1.8% of its value. It was the biggest daily drops since August the 11th. Not reassuring, is it? And all on the news that Bank of America might have to repurchase bad mortgages. Now, why might anyone want Bank of America to repurchase bad mortgages? Interesting, that. Could it be, as, well, granted, the mainstream for-profit media isn't reporting it, but could it be that Bank of America might have to repurchase mortgages? Why? Because they were laden with fraud? Could that, I mean, would that, yeah. Because we know now that the mortgage industry, these, whether it be Bank of America or any of the other banksters, were playing. Do you realize? I don't know. Did Rick talk about this? The fact that these banks were caught hiring Walmart workers to serve as foreclosure agents. Oh, there's all kinds of stuff out there. A story out today indicating that some people working for a mortgage foreclosure law firm in Florida were rewarded with cars, money, jewelry, that they sat around long conference tables pretending that they had witnessed signatures that they had not witnessed. Oh, this thing stinks to high heaven. And the New York Stock Exchange took a 1.5% dip because Bank of America got, well, people are beginning to realize that Bank of America has been caught in a swindle. And yet, what does the Republican Party say? Well, the Republican Party says they don't want to, they don't even want to investigate this. They want to investigate what? Oh, why homeowners got mortgages. Why people with lower income were... Isn't that what drove the bubble? Isn't that what made all the money? Indeed. So your thoughts on that and other topics coming along through the course of the program are welcome. You know the number... 888-520-RICK. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Betting on a green future will see General Electric adding 500 U.S. jobs to the United States. Over the next 4 years, the company will open 4 factories and design centers to help produce energy-efficient refrigerators. The products will be made in the United States with the intention of selling to the United States. These 500 jobs come on top of 1,300 jobs added by the Connecticut-based company since last year. The move marks a small shift in the flow of outsourcing. The jobs in the U.S. will be coming from positions currently held in China and Mexico. The company has stated that it can make the transition because U.S. workers are willing to make higher quality products at lower wages. Those wages will start at roughly $13 per hour. That's a major cut in GE factory wages, which had previously started in the low $20 per hour range. Similar moves by General Motors had workers protesting in front of United Auto Workers Detroit headquarters. It was an unusual sight to see workers protesting in front of a union headquarters. Nearly 100 UAW members brought a protest to the steps of the union's offices to protest concessions that have resulted in GM slashing wages of some veterans. GM recently announced it would be creating 1,300 positions at an Ohio Township plant that will be producing a new subcompact. The factory is currently closed. GM agreed to move the jobs to Orion if the union agreed to allow it to hire 40% of the workers at a second-tier wage of $14 per hour. The previous contract at the plant paid new workers $58,000 per year, so the new rate is nearly half of what was previously paid. If production does start as projected in August of 2011, it will be the only subcompact produced in the United States. Monday was day 3 of a strike being held by Hilton hotel workers in Chicago. Workers are calling out the chain for its slow response to demands for a realistic contract. They're currently working under a contract that expired in August of 2009. The union is asking the chain to up wages by 7%, a request Hilton has balked at. The union says the chain, which was bought out by private equity firm Blackstone Group in 2007 using $180 million in federal bailout funds, is preparing to implement a plan that could see an increase for housekeeper room quotas. The result, according to the union, would be more hours on individual housekeepers and lower standards of cleaning for customers. Foreclosures are back on the table for Bank of America in 23 states. The bank will begin submitting the first of 102,000 amended foreclosure affidavits next week. The 23 states the bank has lifted the moratorium on are all states that require a judge's approval before a foreclosure can move forward. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of open border right outside my door. There's Minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a ferry like old Berlin.
Coming up on 22 minutes past the hour, this is the Rick Smith Show. I'm Bob Kincaid sitting in on this Tuesday evening for Rick, who is away for, unavoidable reasons. And, we'll be back, it's my understanding, tomorrow night, so, don't worry. Picking up on the issue of the foreclosure crisis, and you know what? Maybe it's not a foreclosure crisis. I mean, it is. If you're getting closed on, it's darn sure a foreclosure crisis. But maybe it turns out that in fact it was a fraud crisis. It looks like the federal law enforcement is finally getting a clue about what's going on. The Washington Post, in its business section, in an article by Zachary Goldfarb today, task force probing whether banks broke federal laws during home seizures. Zachary Goldfarb writing, federal law enforcement officials are investigating possible criminal violations in connection with the national foreclosure crisis, examining whether financial firms broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent. See, that's one. You know how the right wing's all the time talking about liberal media? This is one of those moments where you know there's no such thing as the liberal media. Listen to that sentence again. Federal law enforcement officials are investigating possible criminal violations in connection with the national foreclosure crisis, comma, examining whether financial firms broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent court documents to seize people's homes. Pardon me for a moment while my eyes roll back in my head. Examining whether the banksters broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent court documents. You see, at this point, based on the information before us, there is no doubt that the documents that the banksters were filing were, in fact, fraudulent. They were dummied up. They were ginned up. They were faked up. They were rubed up. The foreclosure system that the banksters were running, it was something that would make a carnival barker blush. Oh, sure. Where's my notary stamp? Oh, wait a minute. It's over there next to my unicorn pin. Just a minute. Okay, foreclosed. What? Oh, let me sign it here. Wait a minute.
I do hereby certify that I have witnessed the signature on the foregoing on the 22nd day of June 2010, signed Epstein's mom. Remember, welcome back, Cotter. He always brought the notes for Epstein, always brought the notes for his absences, and they were always signed Epstein's mom. That's what we have here. We have a fraud crisis in the foreclosure bankster industry in which they got so greedy and they got so full of themselves and were so convinced of their own infallibility. We've got a nation covered in foreclosures, the documents to which were signed Epstein's mom. Whether financial firms broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent, it's not whether they, see, let's go through this a little more slowly, a little more carefully. When, it's not when, whether they filed fraudulent court documents. It's whether they broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent court documents. In other words, it is foregone. It is a done deal that they filed fraudulent court documents. Here's a hint. If it was you and you had filed court documents in which you deliberately lied to the court, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio, but you don't have to be a lawyer to know this. All you have to do is have a sense of common decency, some ethics, and a little bit of morality, which, as a liberal, I have in abundance, and which Republicans are largely left wanting. If you go into court, and let's say you're declaring bankruptcy, because a lot of ordinary Joes and Janes have been doing that in the last few years, right? Right. Let's say you're declaring bankruptcy, and you go into bankruptcy court, and you sign documents saying, "Dear bankruptcy judge, I don't have a pot nor a window to throw it out of." But in fact, it turns out that you've got the home in the country and a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. You just think that you've got that squirreled away where the court will notice it. Well, if you file those documents, you have practiced. You have broken federal laws. You have practiced a fraud upon the bankruptcy court. An obvious one. And when Zachary Goldfarb at the Washington Post writes the story about how you tried to hide your home in the country with a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl from the bankruptcy court, he will not say federal officials are investigating whether you broke federal laws when you filed fraudulent court documents. No. It will say John Doe allegedly broke federal laws when he filed fraudulent court documents. You see, that's the difference between you and me and the banksters. It's one of the problems with the Tea Partiers. Now, this being terrestrial radio, I don't know if I'm allowed to call them what I call them. It has to do with those little sachets of tea that come in boxes and tea. But we'll call them Tea Partiers for the sake of terrestrial radio. That's the problem with the Tea Partiers. They're angry. Oh, they're angry. They're so angry. Oh, they're gonna get you. Because they want small government, but they still want all of their benefits. And they're tired of business as usual in Washington, D.C., and we're going to get us some good, upstanding, God-fearing Republicans to go in there and kick butt and take names. Oh, my aching back. That's what they say. And their anger is misplaced. They shouldn't be angry. They shouldn't be angry that people were allowed to keep their jobs who happen to work for major automotive manufacturing concerns. No. There's people worth being mad at. But it's not working folks like you and me. We'll keep this going after the break because I think it's worth it. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, live. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Federal Reserve, which controls America's monetary policy, says it is trying to invigorate job creation in our country by slashing interest rates to the bone. The Fed's move allows big corporations to borrow money for next to nothing so they can expand and start hiring again. Great goal. How's it working out? Well, the first step has gone splendidly, with such giants as DuPont, Hertz, IBM, Microsoft, and PepsiCo rushing to grab the windfall. They've borrowed hundreds of billions of dollars at interest rates of less than 1%. However, there's been quite a stumble on step two of the Fed's plan. Rather than putting this enormous stash of cash to work for America, the corporations are simply squirreling it away for their own enrichment, refusing to spend it on the job expansion that our economy desperately needs. For example, Microsoft, one of the richest corporations on Earth, amassed nearly $5 billion under this opportunistic borrowing scheme, yet has put none of the cheap money into job creation. Instead, it's using a big chunk of it to buy back stock from its own shareholders, a move that merely profits the handful of rich elites who control Microsoft. Worse, such corporate powers as Hertz and PepsiCo are using the funds to take over competitors. These consolidations will actually cut jobs while reducing consumer choices and raising our prices. Indeed, there's no provision in the Fed's program to keep the giants from investing the money in foreign expansion, thus offshoring more American jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, and there's the rub in nearly all of Washington's indirect job creation efforts. Government officials blithely dole out billions and even trillions to corporations and banks with no strings attached. So the big shots and bastards gleefully grab the money and run.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Oh, isn't that charming? Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I'm Bob Kincaid sitting in this fine Tuesday evening and thrilled to be doing it, quite happy to be doing it. And you know what? I don't call talking to just in the course of my usual day-to-day routine. I don't call talking to, well, let's face it. I don't allow conservatives on my program. They're just not allowed. If, however, you would you happen to be one, we can make an exception this evening. Then you're free to chime. I'd like to know why it is that the Tea Partiers and conservatives are mad at the wrong people. I want to know why it is that they're running around there hollering about the deficit when, in fact, they weren't hollering about the deficit when the deficit was being created. It's sort of like being mad at the barn for burning down. Well, you watched it burn and didn't even so much as lift a hand to pick up a bucket of water to throw on it. Right? Yeah, exactly. So if you'd like to jump into the fray and explain, you know, I don't know, are you a Tea Partier? Explain to me why. This could be kind of interesting because I understand that there's a lot of, you know, I've done a lot of reading. There's a lot of anger up that way. And I'd like to hear why that is. Or are you, and this is, I'm addressing myself not to the larger online audience, but rather to the local OSS there in Pennsylvania. Are you liberal in central Pennsylvania? And how hard is it to be liberal in central Pennsylvania? Well, if you want to jump in on the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. I want to make sure I give out the number plenty of times so you've got a chance to get after it. It is toll free. It costs you nothing. See, that should make a Tea Partier very happy. It's 888-520-RICK. You know, because you can spell on your, you got to explain these things to Tea Party that you can spell on your telephone keypad. But 888-520-RICK, that means 7425. 888-520-7425. Or you can reach me via email at Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID at gmail.com. How much easier can we make it, you know? So, getting back to the question I was asking. What would happen to you? What would happen to you? There you are, living your life. Let's say you're not even obviously trying to hide stuff from the bank. But instead of when you go and file a bankruptcy, your petition has to be verified. That means you have to swear that what's in the petition is true. And let's say you sign it, but, you know, you just sort of make up the notary seal. Well, that's wrong. It's supposed to be notarized by a real live notorious Republican. I mean, notary public. What would happen to you? Would they be writing articles asking whether or not you broke federal law when you lied about the fact that you got your petition properly notarized? Because that happened with the fraud crisis as well. Right? Yeah. Zachary Goldfarb continuing in the Washington Post. The Obama administration's Financial Fraud Enforcement Task Force is in the early stages of an investigation into whether banks and other companies that submitted flawed paperwork. In a minute, we're going to look into what that means, flawed paperwork, in state foreclosure proceedings may also have misled federal housing agencies, which now own or insure a majority of home loans, according to the sources. And once again, Mr. Goldfarb writes, the task force is also looking into whether the submission of flawed paperwork during the foreclosure process violated mail or wire fraud laws. My bet? Yes, it is. You want my second bet? And you won't take it. The banksters will get away with it. The banksters will get away with it. If you tried this, citizen, if you tried this in a federal court, you would be under the federal prison. You'd be, I don't know, you would have lower status than that of the Unabomber or the blind sheik. They'd put you under the prison. Well, he cheated on the court. He misled the court. He lied to the court. Now, what is it that they did? What did this bankster foreclosure fraud actually look like? Lucky for us, we know from the Associated Press. And it's not a pretty picture. Or it's a silly picture, depending on how you want to look at things. This goes all the way back to October the 12th. The banksters had so many home foreclosures to go through that they couldn't be bothered to actually follow the law like you and I have to. Have you ever noticed that the Republican Party insists on personal responsibility but never exercise it? I certainly didn't hear. As it turns out, going all the way back to 2007, The banksters, financial institutions, as the Associated Press story puts it, and their mortgage servicing departments were so crazy, were so so pressed for people that could process foreclosures that they gave up on getting people who knew how to process foreclosures. Instead, as a result, or as contained in depositions, which are sworn statements that really are sworn before people authorized to administer oaths for use in courtroom proceedings, depositions that were released a couple of weeks ago, a number of workers testified. Get this. Now, these are workers who were doing mortgage foreclosures. Their depositions were taken. Depositions are sworn statements taken outside of a courtroom in anticipation of later legal action. A number of workers who had processed foreclosures for the banksters gave sworn testimony. You know, that's the part where you put your hand in the air and you say, you know, I swear before Jesus, all of that stuff. They testified that they didn't know what a mortgage was. Now, here they are working for a bank, processing mortgage foreclosures, and they don't know what a mortgage is. Isn't that a little bit like being a hairstylist and not knowing what a hairbrush is? Yeah. Others testified that they had no idea what the word affidavit means. Again, that's a sworn statement. Others, let's see, didn't know what a complaint was. A complaint. You know, all foreclosures have to start with a complaint filed in court. There were people processing these complaints or serving these complaints on people who may not have even deserved to have had their houses foreclosed upon, and they didn't know what it was they were doing. But it gets better. And this is one that ought to drive the Tea Partiers just through the roof. The banksters hired people who had no idea what personal property is. You know, property is divided into two classes, personal property and real property. Real property is generally thought of as being real estate. That's why it's called real property, real estate. Personal property is your car, your boat, your cat. Yes, cats and dogs are personal property. Your goldfish, your clothing, your furniture, your library of musty-smelling old leather-bound books. That's personal property. Well, people processing these foreclosures had no idea what personal property was. But that all pales by comparison, you see, to one fundamental fact that was testified to by a number of the people deposed whose testimony was taken. A number of people deposed in these cases. Several of the people who were queried said they knew that they were lying when they signed the foreclosure affidavits. That they didn't know what affidavit meant. They knew that they were lying when they signed the foreclosure affidavit. And they agreed with the lawyers who asserted that document fraud had been committed. Peter Ticton is a lawyer in Florida. He's defending 3,000 homeowners in foreclosure cases. He took 150 depositions from bank employees, and they said that they signed the foreclosure affidavits without even so much as reviewing the documents or even ever seeing them. They gave themselves a name. They called themselves robo-signers. Mr. Tickton said, and I quote, the mortgage servicers hired people who would never question authority. I don't know whether to be sadder or angrier. And I don't know which way you fall either. Who hired these robo-signers? I mean, did they work at, you know, the First National Bank of fraud, graft, and deceit? Well, you might say that. They were hired by the mortgage service divisions of, let's see, Bank of America. Wait, where have we heard that name before? Oh, yeah, they led the stock market going in the tank today, didn't they? Yeah, they did. They worked for Bank of America. They worked for J.P. Morgan Chase. They worked for Lytton Loan Servicing. That, by the way, is a wholly owned subsidiary division of none other than Goldman Sachs. Bless his heart, lawyer Tickton promised that he would make the testimony available to state and federal agencies engaged in investigating the banksters for mortgage fraud. You know, the ones who were being investigated, like Mr. Goldfarb noted, to see whether or not they broke federal laws when they actually submitted fraudulent documents. Yeah, those guys. Tickton noted this was an industry-wide scheme designed to defraud homeowners. And it really is, it's one of those things that you look at it and you think, really? This happens in America? Because this doesn't sound like it happens in America. This sounds like something that happens in a banana dictatorship, a banana republic. But yeah, it happened in America. This story isn't over. There's more bad banks. Oh, yes, there is. And it's on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We'll be back.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are. Not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Indeed, indeed. It's about 11 minutes before the hour. This is the Rick Smith Show. I'm Bob from Kate. And welcome. Well, I'm just pleased to be talking to people who may never have heard my voice before. I'll go ahead and let you know that I come from a little place called The Horn, the head-on radio network, America's liberal voice. But tonight I'm subbing for my dear good friend Rick Smith as he is out and about. Going back to the bad banks, we might as well just do the hour on the bad banks. They're not bad banks. They're rogue banks. They're criminal banks. And you know what? It's okay to be mad at them. It really, really is. the problem is that we have a situation in this country, and especially at this time of year, under the circumstances, where people are being encouraged to direct their anger where their anger has no business going. But anyway, getting back to exactly what is meant when what's meant when Mr. Goldfarb over at the Washington Post talks about the Fed's investigating whether financial firms broke federal laws when they filed fraudulent court documents to seize people's homes. Getting back to what that actually means, these foreclosure experts were hired when they had no experience whatsoever in the industry. Mr. Tipton, the lawyer in the case, took a deposition in Houston of a foreclosure supervisor, a supervisor no less, who worked with Litton Loan. Remember, they are owned by Goldman Sachs. And this supervisor, not one of the just ordinary workers on the line, this is a supervisor. She couldn't define a promissory note. She couldn't define a mortgagee. She had no clue what a lien was. She didn't know what a receiver was. She didn't know what a jurisdiction was. She didn't know what a circuit court was. She didn't know what plaintiff's assignor means. And she didn't know what the word defendant means. What kind of a hole do you have to live in where you don't know what defendant means? I mean, you know what defendant means if you've ever watched the People's Court. Well, of course, it's definitely 3 o'clock. Definitely 3 o'clock, People's Court. Judge Wapner, 3 o'clock. How can you not know what defendant means? Let's see. She testified she didn't know why a spouse. Did she know what a spouse means? She didn't know what a spouse might claim, what kind of interest, why a spouse might claim an interest in a property. The supervisor didn't know what the required conditions were before a bank could foreclose. She testified that she didn't know who the holder of the mortgage note was. This supervisor testified at one point in the deposition, this is a quote, I don't know the ins and outs of a loan. I just sign documents. It sounds like Edith Bunker. Oh, watchy. And this is what America's facing. This is the kind of fraud that, frankly, the Federal Racketeering Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act was designed to deal with. It's generally used on the mob. But, don't tell the Tea Partiers, the right-wingers and the Republicans and the banks that are pulling their chain, they are the mob. Sure would be a darn shame to smarten up a chump, wouldn't it? Because, see, that's what the Tea Partiers are being played for. Chumps. They're scared, they're angry, and they're ignorant. And that is a delightful combination. If you happen to be a right-winger, if you happen to be a corporation who now has more rights than an actual individual under the Constitution of the United States, thanks to the Citizens United decision, scared, angry, and stupid. I can back up stupid. I got that too. And if you can direct them with all that anger, with all that fear, with all that stupid, if you can get them to vote against their own interests. There's never been the likes of such a successful con run on any carnival midway or at any three-card Monte table by a subway entrance. Never. And the scary thing is, it just might happen. It just might. Meanwhile, it would only be fair to note that Bank of America says, we have had an internal review, and it shows that our foreclosures have been accurate. This review will ensure we have a full understanding of any potential issues and quickly address them. That was Bank of America spokesman Dan Fromm. Well, how is it that that happens when these are the people you hired? How do you have foreclosures that are running on the square like Mr. Fromm says? Who, interestingly, the people who talked about how they didn't know what a defendant was, how they didn't know what a mortgage was, didn't know what real property was, didn't know what an affidavit was, didn't know what all those, they were under oath. They had put their hand in the air, other hand on the Bible or some such, and sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them, Flying Spaghetti Monster. Dan Fromm didn't. Dan Fromm was not under oath when he said, this review will ensure we have a full understanding of any potential issues and quickly address them. In other words, the people being deposed who were under oath, they couldn't lie. Mr. Fromm was not under oath and therefore could. Just saying. Well, at least Bank of America responded to the Associated Press. Lytton Loan Servicing, a wholly owned captive of Goldman Sachs. No, they dummied up. Thomas Kelly is another one of those guys who isn't under oath. He works for J.P. Morgan Chase. He said that J.P. Morgan Chase has at least requested to not enter into any judgments until the banks had reviewed its proceeds. But then he also went ahead and said the bank believes that all the underlying facts of the cases involved in the document fraud allegations are true. In other words, there's tons of document fraud, but they say that they should be able to go ahead and foreclose anyway, even though they did lie, cheat, and steal in the process. That's a heck of a defense. I mean, that's Johnny Cochran stuff, isn't it? Welcome to October 2010 in America, where we got lots of anger, and we got lots of dirty dealings, but the people that are angriest aren't angry at the people doing the dirty dealings. That's a heck of a note. I'd love to, and if you want to talk about it, you are welcome to jump in. I hope you know the phone number here. It is 888-520-888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. That's because this is the Rick Smith Show, coming to you live. Sitting in for Rick Smith, I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back after the break.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Betting on a green future will see General Electric adding 500 U.S. jobs to the United States. Over the next 4 years, the company will open 4 factories and design centers to help produce energy-efficient refrigerators. The products will be made in the United States with the intention of selling to the United States. These 500 jobs come on top of 1,300 jobs added by the Connecticut-based company since last year. The move marks a small shift in the flow of outsourcing. The jobs in the U.S. will be coming from positions currently held in China and Mexico.
The company has stated that it can make the transition because U.S. workers are willing to make higher quality products at lower wages. Those wages will start at roughly $13 per hour. That's a major cut in GE factory wages, which had previously started in the low $20 per hour range. Similar moves by General Motors had workers protesting in front of United Auto Workers Detroit headquarters. It was an unusual sight to see workers protesting in front of a union headquarters. Nearly 100 UAW members brought a protest to the steps of the union's offices to protest concessions that have resulted in GM slashing wages of some veterans. GM recently announced it would be creating 1,300 positions at an Ohio Township plant that will be producing a new subcompact. The factory is currently closed. GM agreed to move the jobs to Orion if the union agreed to allow it to hire 40% of the workers at a second-tier wage of $14 per hour. The previous contract at the plant paid new workers $58,000 per year, so the new rate is nearly half of what was previously paid. If production does start as projected in August of 2011, it will be the only subcompact produced in the United States. Monday was day three of a strike being held by Hilton Hotel workers in Chicago. Workers are calling out the chain for its slow response to demands for a realistic contract. They're currently working under a contract that expired in August of 2009. The union is asking the chain to up wages by 7%, a request Hilton has balked at. The union says the chain, which was bought out by private equity firm Blackstone Group in 2007 using $180 million in federal bailout funds, is preparing to implement a plan that could see an increase for housekeeper room quotas. The result, according to the union, will be more hours on individual housekeepers and lower standards of cleaning for customers. Foreclosures are back on the table for Bank of America in 23 states. The bank will begin submitting the first of 102,000 amended foreclosure affidavits next week. The 23 states the bank has lifted the moratorium on are all states that require a judge's approval before a foreclosure can move forward. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Hour two is underway. It's about 3.5 minutes past the hour, and let's go directly to the phones. Jim is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
Kind of amazed at what I'm hearing here.
You know, which parts? There's a lot.
To tell you the truth, I don't know where to begin. Well, let's start with the RICO Act. I think it was like October of 1970 when they signed that statute.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Organized crime?
Yeah.
Well, basically, how many RICO predicates would you imagine are involved in this, in these actions?
I think it could keep an army of RICO lawyers busy for a lifetime, don't you?
It would appear so. And these transactions, these foreclosures, they were, how were they transmitted to the recipients?
Fax, U.S. mail, electronically in some instances, you know, scan it and email it. Everything short of courier pigeon and Pony Express, I would imagine.
Well, it's my understanding, when you put your name on a document and you put it in the U.S. mail or however it is, these actions are governed by federal statute, are they not?
That is my understanding as well, Jim, yes.
Well, I know if you do something like that in the mail, for example, I think per action it's like 5 years and $10,000.
Not exactly sure on the penalties.
Penalties are pretty severe. I mean, for example,
well,
I don't
the
know
crimes
if
are pretty severe. I mean, there's a reason that wire fraud and mail fraud are crimes.
Well, I mean,
because you're using the institution of the federal government to, pardon?
If a lawyer should overbill a client and send the bill through the mail, that's fraud, isn't it?
Very likely. Very likely.
Well, you know, these actions aren't very sexy and very appealing, but, I mean, they do have teeth, and that's why, you know, It's 5 years or 10,000.
Well, remember, yeah, Al Capone went down for income tax evasion, not
murder.
Well,
I mean, these people have more than they ever had on Al Capone. That's what I'm driving at. By these people, I mean, if they're going to enforce the law properly and fairly, I mean, when they did this kind of stuff and they put these people up who didn't know what they were doing, supposedly, I mean, when you sign something and you put it in the mail or you use it against another person without knowing what you're doing and in contravention of the law, I think you're going down for that, or you should.
Well, and that's my question, though, Jim. Who goes down? Because if you consider all of this, if you back up and consider all of this in the light of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, the Citizens United decision says that corporations are persons with all the rights that are attendant upon a flesh and blood human being.
And they also have all the responsibilities and can suffer the same penalties, can they not?
That's the part that's not open, that I don't know the answer to. Because, frankly, if Bank of America did this, then Bank of America, its CEO, its CFO, its COO, and its entire board of directors should spend a lot of time in a federal facility making small rocks out of big rocks. But the question is, do we have the kind of justice system in this country that's willing to do that to such high and mighties? They wouldn't hesitate to do it to you or to me, Jim.
No. I mean, you know, when you sign your name to a tax return or any other legal document, and a foreclosure is a legal document, and this aforesaid action is done so erroneously, you just can't say, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, whatever happens to the phrase, ignorance of the law is no excuse.
It isn't for the people that the right wing likes to holler about taking personal responsibility.
And being able to stand behind it. And if you can't stand behind it, and particularly if you do it with malice and forethought, or regardless or ignorance, I would imagine that the same penalties would apply.
Well, Jim, it's sort of like the Iraq War, if you'll pardon my little tangent here. We saw, for instance, in the Abu Ghraib debacle, we saw privates and we saw sergeants disciplined to the fullest extent, well, in some instances at least, of military justice, which can be quite harsh. We did not see the architects of Abu Ghraib punished or even charged. We did not see Donald Rumsfeld charged or tried. And God knows we did not see George W. Bush tried, impeached, or punished.
Well, I know they tried to nail that female two-star general.
Janice Karpinski.
Yeah, for the actions that occurred in Abu Ghraib. So I guess basically what we're talking about here, these people have so many buffers, for lack of a better term, between them to their chains of command, and the chains of command in the financial industry are very, very similar to those in the military services.
I think that's probably correct. Among other things, you have to bear in mind that these low-level employees who had formerly worked at nail salons and Walmart, these are just workers.
And they are employees of Walmart to actually participate as officers of the bank.
Yes. The robo-signers in this story.
Well, that's just absolutely beyond the pale of any scope of whatever little imagination I have. And believe you me, I have a very big imagination.
Yeah, hairstylists, Walmart workers.
Any type of legal document, place it in the mail, transmit it however, and to do so without compunction, knowledge of the law. I don't understand this. This does not compute. And why would these people in any way be immune from penalties?
The folks, well, that's what I'm getting at, Jim. The folks who did the robo-signing, the folks who didn't know what affidavits were, they're going to get hung out to dry and probably punished within the full scope of the federal law's ability to do so. Because they're not going to have the hotshot silk suit lawyers. But just as Abu Ghraib didn't happen, it was not dreamed up by a bunch of privates and sergeants, so too this foreclosure fraud crisis was not dreamed up by a former hairstylist at Walmart. It wasn't dreamed up by a vice president. It was dreamed up at the very highest levels of the banking industry. And I'm sorry, but in 2010, in October, I there's something inside me that doubts the ability of the federal prosecutors to not drill down but drill up all the way to the penthouse suites and see that justice is done. Although I guess the market, you know how it is with the right wing and markets. The story that I started out with from the market today, Bank of America went in the tank because some other institutions are trying to compel it to buy back the dummied up financial instruments that it had pawned off on them.
I mean, for example, when a person is foreclosed upon like this, don't bankruptcy courts get involved here?
Not unless they're able to declare bankruptcy. Because the only thing the bankruptcy will do is to reaffirm the status of the debt and allow the homeowner to remain in the home as long as they're making payments. But because of the nature of the whole derivatives market, these were mortgages that were initially manageable, but were designed to become unmanageable.
With malice and
foreball,
in other words,
the financial industry's
own making advantage of any economic downturn sustained by the mortgage holder in order to repossess property.
Yeah. And then the banks pick up the property for pennies on the dollar, despite whatever equity the mortgage holder or the mortgagee may have in it. And in my stacks, I've got another horror story for later that's sort of tangential too, but very closely associated with all of this. The government has gone into the tax farming business a la ancient Rome, Jim.
Oh yeah.
I think what we're seeing is a situation where this nation has become so financially diseased that the disease is finally beginning to feed upon itself. And what scares me is I don't know where it ends.
The thing is, the law back then was used to assess property, take property, and assign them to the recipients or the owners of the latter fundi is.
Well, not just that. The Roman concept of the publicani. These were tax farmers, and what they would do is they would bid to the Roman Senate the amount of tax that they thought they could collect out in the provinces, say, you know, Asia province or Macedonia or what have you. And what they would do is they would bid the taxes up at such a level so that once they collected it all, they could pay X, they could pay Y to the Roman treasury and then have X back in their own pocket as a padding. Well, it's happening again, Jim. In almost the same fashion. Because not only are people going into foreclosure crisis with their homes, you know, if you can't make your house payment, guess what else you can't pay? Your property taxes. And then it gets real nasty.
So you're talking about a cascading effect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the housing, you know, it's almost like it's pancaking, to use a term from another issue.
Yes, I think I know about that issue too. It's up in near Canal Street in New York City.
There you go.
Well, I really don't know what to say. I don't have the institutional knowledge of an attorney or a tax lawyer or a banking official. But, I mean, these people are, this is their profession, their trade, and they're entrusted with property. They're entrusted with people's lives, their futures. And I don't think they're being very good custodians. And when that happens to someone who is the custodian of the aforementioned things that I've mentioned, And these actions are done without any regard for the law, I can't see any difference between them and people like Tony Soprano.
Well, I don't think it's just you, Jim. I think it's the nature of the situation, and I think you're calling it correctly.
Okay, well, listen, thank you for your time, and I hope you have a good program.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for calling in, Jim. You made it a better evening. I appreciate it.
Well, I just don't understand how people are certain, because they're on Wall Street, are allowed to do all these things without regulation, or not Wall Street, but if they are in a house of banking or whatever, and how they can get away with this type of thing.
It's because they've got a gun to the economy's head, Jim. You'd be surprised what you can get away with if you've got a gun to somebody's head.
Basically like the mob.
Yeah. One false move and he gets it.
You know, Bob, people can break your legs in so many ways, can't they?
Yeah, and I think we're finding out new and novel ones every day. And it's being done by, well, that's why I think that little word that's been coined, the banksters. They're not banks, they're not bankers, and they're not quite gangsters, they're banksters.
Well, I don't see the difference between a gangster, a bankster, and a mobster.
I think if the RICO Act, as we were discussing, was applied, we would find out that there's very little. Jim, thank you very much, and have a great evening.
All right, Bob. Good night.
Bye now. And we will keep rolling along. I'm told that Sandra has been waiting. You there, Sandra?
Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Just following you all over the cyber radio world. Anyway, that's you just doing a sit-in?
Yeah.
Oh. Broadcasting all over Pennsylvania?
All over central Pennsylvania, yes.
Wow. Hey, listen.
And trying desperately to watch my mouth.
I have the AM radio hat on right now.
All right, so we're both going to dodge it. We're both going to dodge the FCC.
Well, the thing about all that is, you forget. You know what I'm saying? But anyway.
The truth of the matter is, I haven't done terrestrial radio in 5 years.
Well, no, but you're a professional, so I suppose you have to give it a little bit of thought because it's been a while, like you said.
Oh, I got a little message from our chief engineer, John Fox, and he says, watch those words, Bob.
Yeah, no. It took me a minute. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, let me try to get it together because I thought, because I know how it is. Anyway, listen, I was listening to what Jim was asking. I mean, the thing is that the power elite, they're not constrained by government anymore. And they're not subjected to, the laws. So, that just signals a huge breakdown. And this foreclosure thing, it's bad. It's interesting that the investors are now demanding a Bank of America, what they call the putbacks, are going to be the undoing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, indeed. And the idea that this little crisis today on Wall Street was brought about, Sandra, by other institutions. Granted, one of them was the U.S. government. But you're right. That says a boatload. They're not sweating the feds out. The feds out there, with the guns and the badges. They're sweating the ones with the hot paper that the banks wrote.
Well, and also the feds are they've been hesitant, but they're going to jump in now because the states are making noise and. You're going to have the usual tension between the state and the Fed. But what I worry about is that we've already, bailed them out to the tune of trillions, and they're going to be there, hat in hand again. And I'm not too sure, how this administration is going to justify TARP 3.0 or whatever number we're at now. Because they're
going to
destroy the dollar.
But Sandra, do you think it changes the likelihood of TARP 3.0 to look at the brazen behavior they've engaged in with TARP 1.0 and TARP 2.0?
Well, that's the thing. We haven't had that. And Bill Black, who was the prosecutor / forensic accountant, economist, was able to put 1,000 of those people away during the SNL, and he is saying that, people need to be prosecuted, and the fact that they haven't prosecuted not one is a huge problem.
The thing that sort of stuns me, Sandra, is that all this information, these Walmart hairstylists who don't know what affidavits are and all this, this isn't coming out as a function of diligent inquiry by any arm of governmental regulation and I'd hate for that to play into the hands of the Tea Party mob. This is a bunch of lawyers, consumer lawyers, once again showing that they are in fact the lawyers with the white hats on, the ones that are constantly tarred and feathered by the Republican Party and the right wing, the people who represent injured workers, the people who represent people who have been tormented and tortured and killed by negligently designed products, the lawyers who go out there and represent, people who've been fraudulently foreclosed upon. These are the, how long would the Obama Justice Department have ever figured this out by themselves?
It's incredible. And what's even more disturbing is how undisciplined the media is. They're just jumping back and forth from this, foreclosure bit, which is just the tip of the iceberg. The bigger story is that these tranches and mortgage-backed securities have been sold repeatedly over and over again when they shouldn't have only been sold but once. The tranches were only sampled at 10%, then the due diligence ended. You hear what I sound like? It's not interesting. But this is the big story, not, some poor folks who...
Yeah, but you're opening up a door, Sandra.
behavior that, we kind of have to go through, does this is what drives me crazy about our culture. You said you hear what I'm talking about. This isn't interesting. Yeah, it is.
Well,
but
I'm just saying,
you have,
though,
but you have to live in a world where people aren't dancing in order for it to be interesting. This is people's lives.
Yeah, no.
Do we have to have Bristol Palin doing the cha-cha in order for our attention to be grabbed?
Yeah, and to hear about Daryl Isaac planning to investigate poor people again, you know, all of it makes me sick. But what's more disturbing is the blatant disregard of law for some people and not for others. I mean, that kind of stuff is what bring down governments. Seriously, that's, you know, I really am sort of just struck by the pre French revolutionary type of behavior, if you know what I mean.
Well, there's some right winger, and I can't remember which one she is. You know, they all run together for me. But she was prating around on one of the cable news channels about how if we don't get our deficit under control, we're going to be Greece. Well, the austerity stuff is what drove Greece to be Greece.
And yeah, I know it's and also Ireland is always the poster child for. They've had almost 4 years of this so-called austerity, and where are they at? The bond vigilantes aren't interested at all in them after they comply. So, but we're not going to head that road because of this sort of reserve status. But they seem determined to destroy it. I don't know. But the Bank of America, we're supposed to take their word for it. That's the thing. Can you believe it?
No. And again, I offer to you the same question that I offered to Jim. Is it going to be enough if we put away a Walmart hairstylist or a thousand for, 5 years with some federal probation afterward?
Well, they did that with the Abu Ghraib stuff, and we're supposed to be satisfied with that. So, like I said, that legal, the law is,
But Sandra, what happened to that authoritarian streak that runs so swift and so deep through the entire Republican structure, where, you know, we've got to punish people for their crimes in order to create a deterrent that those crimes will not be committed.
It doesn't apply to the elite.
If we don't get the CEO and CFO and COO of Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and all of these other fraud outfits, what's to deter them from continuing to do it?
Well, nothing. You know, hence Bank of America talking about they're going to press on with their kleptocracy. It's just, you know, it's just, I don't know what this is, but the silence from the Obama administration is so gruesome.
Well, that, you know, that Washington Post article I was talking about at the beginning of the program is the first I've seen.
Yeah, I read that, and I was really surprised. I know exactly the one you're talking about. I was like, really, you know. So it's starting to shake out the investor class, which is as we'll start, it'll start ramping up if enough of these institutions get, but they have to because the mortgage-backed securities are such, they're so fraudulent, you know? I can't even begin to, I keep going back to that because it's like, say you have 500 mortgages and you only sample 10%, you say, oh yeah, those are okay. But you have no idea what the other, 90% of them are, really. But you're selling.
Well, what guarantee do we have that that was even a legitimate, chi-square statistical sampling?
Well, that's what they're trying to. But it shouldn't. That's not even enough of a sampling.
No, it's not enough to make it a legitimate sample, for starters. But
it makes it fraudulent, so which is why these investors are now coming back to try to recoup their losses. So, I've read predictions that, we're going to head for another bank meltdown.
And it'll be because why? Because all this stuff is bouncing back and flying in their faces again?
Yeah. I told you a long time ago that the mark, the magic, covered up their bad assets. And you can only do that for so long. And now they're trying to be greedy to snatch. I think banks hold, like, the largest percentage of mortgages ever in America right now.
And when I find this, you know, I find this, Sandra, to be more than, you know, again, I'm not scared of 6 foot 7 inch Arabs with portable dialysis machines hiding in caves in Pakistan.
Oh no, this should scare you right here.
But the CEO of Bank of America scares me to death.
No, that and Obama having meetings with Jamie Dimon, that should scare you. You know.
Then what is it? Where is it, Sandra? What don't they get?
Well, I think it's more what we don't get, actually. You know? I mean,
we don't get that we're not on the inside and we're not allowed to play the game. Well, on the odd chance that there might be some Tea Partier out there listening on terrestrial radio tonight, what's the difference between a Tea Partier's anger at God knows what they're angry at versus the legitimate anger at the fraud being practiced at the level we're discussing?
Well, you know, it's damn near impossible to respond to that level of, you know, so you turn and you step on some black or some Latino or hiss at the gays. I mean, that's how it's been forever in this country. I mean, why would it change now?
So is that just shorthand for we're done?
No, I don't. I don't go there because otherwise, I mean, why would I be constantly going on about it if I didn't care? But you know, I'm just trying to understand what we're up against.
Well, it certainly seems like we're up against a bunch. Have you seen the tax farming story, Sandra?
I heard no. Is that what you're talking about? The way, because I remember studying about the people in Rome bidding on. I know exactly what you're talking about. What are you basing
that
on here?
This is a different different format than what I'm used to. So I've got to take a break, and I've really enjoyed the conversation. But I swear that's what I'm going through next.
Okay. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care, Sandra. Bye now. 32 and a half past the hour. We'll take a break and come back. And, hey, look, you hear how easy that conversation is? It's easy to get in on 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me. We're gonna make it somehow.
Indeed, Rick Smith does. I love listening to Rick because, well, doggone it, it's my personally closely held opinion that Rick is among the best that there is in this country today doing liberal talk, bar none. Someday, Central Pennsylvania will look up and go, it all started here. I believe that firmly. If you want to get involved in the program, you know how to reach it, I hope by now, but I'll go ahead and give the number out again. 888-520-RICK. 888-520-7425 is the toll-free number for reaching the Rick Smith Show. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm down in the wilds of wild, wonderful West Virginia. You can reach me during this program at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com if you'd rather email as opposed to dialing in. Jim, after our conversation, emailed and noted, as far as legal implications are concerned for the upper echelon, he says, Sedlex, Duralex, for the upper echelons of the law, is latex. And it's true. It can be stretched out of all proportion to anything that you and I would ever imagine, it being possible for the law to tolerate. And this story is an example of that. It's shocking. But then again, when we take a look at what the banks are and the financial industry is doing to the people of the United States, it is almost as though we've lost the ability to be shocked. But here we go again. I first learned about this over at Crooks and Liars, one of my favorite places to go for content, crooksandliars.com. Directed me to a Huffington Post story from their investigative arm called The New Tax Man, Big Banks and Hedge Funds. Well, you just know with a headline like that, it's not going to come out well. Expand a little bit on some of what I was talking with Jim and Sandra about, I'm a passionate student of ancient history. Many of you who are familiar with my program on the Horn, headonradionetwork.com from 6 to 9 p.m. Weeknights know that. And there are a lot of instances where you can look back at the ancients and find out that just as it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, lo and behold, there is nothing new under the sun. We've been here before. And in particular, as I mentioned with Jim, the ancient Romans had a class of businessmen. They came from the knight class, not the senatorial class. They came from the knight class, and they were called publicani, P-U-B-L-I-C-A-N-I. Publicanus would be singular, publicani is plural. And what they did is Rome had privatized, take a hint, Tea Partiers, Rome had privatized tax collection. Not inside Rome, but in its provinces.
you remember all roads led to Rome. Well, they led there from places like Cilicia and Bithynia and Pontus and Syria and Palestine and Macedonia and southern Greece, from Italian Gaul, from Spain, from North Africa. And taxes were collected in all of those provinces of ancient Rome. And the way they went about it is the tax collectors, the publicani, would bid on the right to collect taxes in the provinces. And, of course, it would take their own money to go out and collect the taxes. So what they would do is they would find out what the Roman government wanted to collect in the way of taxes, and then they would add on enough to provide them with a tasty profit after they had collected what it was that the Roman Senate and people of Rome said that they wanted. And it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. Because it wasn't a matter of Rome collecting enough taxes to keep the governmental administration of the provinces going. They had there had to be more squeezed out of the provinces by these unscrupulous collectors. In the name of what? Yes, profit. It's always holy profit, isn't it? Not holy P-R-O-P-H-E-T, but holy P-R-O-F-I-T, holy profit. Well, everything old is new again, and there is nothing new under the sun. Fred Schulte and Ben Protest at the Huffington Post Investigative Fund write the following. Sit down. Nearly a dozen major banks and hedge funds. You know, any sentence in October 2010 that begins with those words is going to come to no good end. Nearly a dozen major banks and hedge funds anticipating quick profits from homeowners who fall behind on property taxes are quietly plowing hundreds of millions of dollars into businesses that collect the debts, tack on escalating fees, and threaten to foreclose on the homes of those who fail to pay. It is Roman tax farming circa 75 BCE all over again. You sort of feel like you're in one of the last scenes from the great film Casablanca, where Captain Renault says, "Round up the usual suspects," because there they are again. The Wall Street investors, which include Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, the usual suspects, have purchased from local governments the right to collect delinquent taxes on several hundred thousand properties, many in distressed housing markets. Let that sink in. This is real. Now, why would you do this? Why would local governments farm out their right to collect taxes to rapacious banksters? I'll tell you why. This is one of those consequences that flows out of... You remember when dim sun George W. Bush... Do you remember when he said things like, "It's your money, we're going to give you back some of your money," and then proceeded to give billions upon billions of dollars to his best buddy? You know, what did he say in one of the speeches? What was it? Some call you the haves and the have-mores. I call you my base. Well, the haves and the have-mores, by virtue of the tax monies that were given away to them, starved the federal government of the tax monies that the federal government was able to send downslope to state, county, and municipal governments, the entities that collect property taxes. I'm not sure what the county structure is in Pennsylvania, but here in wild, wonderful West by God, almost level West Virginia, it's fairly straightforward. You have a county tax assessor, and the county tax assessor establishes the assessed value for one's property, real and personal. We touched on that earlier. And then the sheriff of the county is in charge of collecting the taxes. there's a sheriff's tax office and there's a sheriff's law enforcement office. Well, guess what happens? When the monies no longer flow downhill from the federal government to state counties, states, counties, and municipalities, the office has to lay off staff, which means that the people who would otherwise collect the taxes are no longer able to do so. Consequently, faced with a shortfall in county revenues that were already drying up anyway, the counties then turn, lo and behold, to the banksters. You know, sooner or later, depending on where you live, if you get in enough financial trouble, you will eventually go to the loan shark. You will eventually do business with the mob. And that's where a lot of counties and municipalities find themselves at this point in time. So what they do is they pass along the right, and whether it's legal or not is an entirely different question. They pass along the right to collect delinquent taxes to the likes of Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase and a number of hedge funds. The banks and the hedge funds then pour money into the creation of new companies. And the new companies have strange names. They've got weird little post office box addresses. And that way you're not supposed to ever see the fact that there's a direct line that runs straight from these tax farmers to Wall Street. Now here's the fun part. When you're in the kind of financial straits that a lot of Americans are in right now, how many people are unemployed? And when you're making decisions on a monthly basis between food and medicine, between medicine and that new set of tires because you're driving on four Maypops, it's real easy for things like property taxes to sort of slip into the background. And so you find yourself owing a couple of $100 in property taxes. But guess what? Once your municipality or your county or your state has turned you over to the tax farmers from Wall Street, in addition to the right to collect the taxes, they also give to the tax farmers the right to impose overdue fees, interest, and the next thing you know, where before you owed a couple of $100, you find yourself owing thousands. In some states, the tax farmers from Wall Street are allowed to tack on as much as 18% interest, according to this report from Huffington Post. And on top of the interest, they tack on legal fees. You know, tax, tag, title, and dealer prep. Yeah, that. And guess what happens then? When it turns out that the taxpayer can't pay, the banksters, here we go again, foreclose. In some states, according to the article, in as little as 6 months' time. If they foreclose or the property is sold for taxes on the courthouse steps, then bang, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and these dummied up, dodged up companies suddenly find themselves owning properties for literally pennies on the dollar. Messrs. Schulte and Protest at Huffington Post Investigative Fund found out that in June, Bank of America snatched up liens on properties in Florida owned by low-income residents and nonprofit public interest groups. What did they foreclose on? The banksters from Bank of America foreclosed on a Salvation Army shelter. They foreclosed on a preschool. They foreclosed on a wildlife rescue group involved in the Gulf of Mexico oil spill cleanup. They bought liens on properties of the wealthy, too. including that the property of Lamar Odom, an NBA player with the L.A. Lakers. This is a breathtaking story. This is amazing. This is amazing to read. It's some observers of the financial services industry said they were services. Financial services. What a laugh. Some observers of the financial services industry said they were surprised to learn that banks, some of which received billions of dollars in taxpayer-funded bailouts in recent years, were rushing to profit from homeowners having trouble paying their tax bills. James Cox is at the Duke University School of Law. He's a professor there. He specializes in corporate and securities law. He says, "This is not how I'd like to be making my money. I would find it personally distasteful to foreclose or press a claim against individuals, many of whom have lost their jobs and are in tight economic straits." Well, see, that's because James Cox, Duke University School of Law professor, has some personal morality to him. He has some values. He has some fix. Bank of America doesn't. It's worth remembering that no corporation operating in the United States today has a legal obligation to act within any realm of ethics save make more profit for the shareholders. And as long as it is profitable in the United States of America to torment people who are already in tormented circumstances, as long as that's profitable, it's good business. And you must remember that it was a Republican president who once famously said, "The business of America is business." In other words, anything goes. Mr. Cox went on to note, there's no bailout for people struggling to pay their taxes. Here's the fun part. These days, banks and hedge funds, stung by the failure of many speculative investments, the bubble, see tax liens as a relatively safe option that can yield returns of around 7%. Does this blow? I had no idea. This absolutely blows my mind. We knew that the banks were in the fraud game. We've gone over that at length over the course of the last 2 hours here on the Rick Smith Show. But lo and behold, these banks, which are largely work hand in glove with the right wing. They work with all these right wing candidates who swear that they're gonna save America. Come November the 2nd, these banks own those politicians. And these politicians prate on about how they hate taxes. But they don't. They love them because they've figured out a way to make a fast, easy buck off of them. Some banks are also, here we go again, here comes the derivatives market. Some banks are also packaging tax liens as securities, in a similar way to how unpaid home loans are securitized and selling them to investors. See, this, whether it was the housing bubble or the derivatives blow up or now this, all of these things are driven by nothing but manifest, pure, unmitigated greed. How could you possibly invest in something that you knew was driven by people in the most desperate circumstances of their lives being tormented, nigh unto death. How could you do that? Well, if you're part of America's investor class, you can do that because you worship daily at the altar of Holy Prophet. If mortgage holders fail to pay overdue taxes, an investor could waltz off with a home worth hundreds of thousands of dollars for nothing more than the price of paying the owner's tax bill. Lloyd McClendon, he's an owner of RealAuction.com in Plantation, Florida. They conduct online auctions of Florida and other states. He says putting it all together, it makes for a solid investment. There's an awful lot of new big money in the sales this year. That's James Powell. He's also from Florida, and he's an investor. There's an awful lot of new big money in the sales this year. There's good money to be had in human misery, and I don't want to miss out on having a big chunk. I got to have a human misery. I got to have a human misery presence in my portfolio. Can't have no human misery gap. Because human misery is going at a high dollar. It's a good dollar this year, I tell you. I tell you it is. Awful lot of new big money in the sales this year. I don't care much for organized religion. But some of the stuff that I was subjected to early on, stuck. And I can't help reading a quote like that. There's an awful lot of new big money in the sales, is ya? I can't help reading a quote like that and remembering somewhere in that book that these same right-wingers and Tea Partiers and so forth think is holy. I can't help remembering a verse in there that says, "What profiteth it a man if he gain the whole world, but lose his own soul?" Soul schmoll, there's an awful lot of new big money in the sales this year. So that's where we stand, and we're not done with this story. And we got the other stuff to do in the hour remaining to us, and maybe a phone call or two if you want to get involved. You know the number. 888-520-RICK, R-I-C-K. Help me, Rick. 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. And you can reach me via email at bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Jump right in. Live from Central Pennsylvania, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Betting on a green future will see General Electric adding 500 U.S. jobs to the United States. Over the next 4 years, the company will open 4 factories and design centers to help produce energy-efficient refrigerators. The products will be made in the United States with the intention of selling to the United States. These 500 jobs come on top of 1,300 jobs added by the Connecticut-based company since last year. The move marks a small shift in the flow of outsourcing. The jobs in the U.S. will be coming from positions currently held in China and Mexico. The company has stated that it can make the transition because U.S. workers are willing to make higher quality products at lower wages. Those wages will start at roughly $13 per hour. That's a major cut in GE factory wages, which had previously started in the low $20 per hour range. Similar moves by General Motors had workers protesting in front of United Auto Workers Detroit headquarters. It was an unusual sight to see workers protesting in front of a union headquarters. Nearly 100 UAW members brought a protest to the steps of the union's offices to protest concessions that have resulted in GM slashing wages of some veterans. GM recently announced it would be creating 1,300 positions at an Ohio Township plant that will be producing a new subcompact. The factory is currently closed. GM agreed to move the jobs to Orion if the union agreed to allow it to hire 40% of the workers at a second-tier wage of $14 per hour. The previous contract at the plant paid new workers $58,000 per year, so the new rate is nearly half of what was previously paid. If production does start as projected in August of 2011, it will be the only subcompact produced in the United States. Monday was day three of a strike being held by Hilton Hotel workers in Chicago. Workers are calling out the chain for its slow response to demands for a realistic contract. They're currently working under a contract that expired in August of 2009. The union is asking the chain to up wages by 7%, a request Hilton has balked at. The union says the chain, which was bought out by private equity firm Blackstone Group in 2007 using $180 million in federal bailout funds, is preparing to implement a plan that could see an increase for housekeeper room quotas. The result, according to the union, would be more hours on individual housekeepers and lower standards of cleaning for customers. Foreclosures are back on the table for Bank of America in 23 states. The bank will begin submitting the first of 102,000 amended foreclosure affidavits next week. The 23 states the bank has lifted the moratorium on are all states that require a judge's approval before a foreclosure can move forward. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Great music coming from the production suite there. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm sitting in this evening for Rick Smith, who is out being his own wonderful Rick Smith self. He'll be back tomorrow night, I assure you. Anyway, just to wrap up the rest of this story, that guy James Powell in this tax farming story, who said there's an awful lot of new big money in the sales this year. He's a little upset because the smaller investors have been overtaken by well-heeled banks and funds that now bid online and in volume. It might be beneficial to know some of the names that these organizations are operating under. Bank of America bids on Florida tax lien sales. Isn't it interesting that it's Florida? Florida that's been the beneficiary of so much good Republican government. Bank of America's bid on Florida tax lien sales as Bennu LLC, Bennu being named after the mythical bird said to be the soul of the ancient Egyptian sun god. It's bid as Osprey LLC and Ekru LLC. Fortress Investment Group is a hedge fund run by former Fannie Mae chief Daniel Mudd. It's used 17 different corporate dummy names. Pleasant Valley Capital LLC, Travis Farm Investments LLC. J.P. Morgan and Bank of America and Fortress Investment Group, none of them were willing to comment for the article, by the way. Let's see. Wells Fargo's in the business. Deutsche Bank invests through a subsidiary. Bank Atlantic of Fort Lauderdale is a longtime tax certificate investor in several states. And here's the kicker. Even though some of the banksters have suspended foreclosures, not so much with this stuff. No. They may have suspended the foreclosures, but maybe they are full steam ahead when it comes to tax farming. This is all over at Huffington Post. The name of the article, it's under The New Tax Man, Big Banks. And, you know, there's always someone out there who's willing to describe their nasty conduct as being somehow a public good. The few investors willing to talk about the tax lien business with the investigative fund, Huffington Post investigative fund, argue that they are playing a vital role in helping cash-strapped local governments plug holes in budgets, and in some cities, helping rehabilitate older buildings. Oh, well, darn, cue the Shirley Temple music. That returns the properties to the tax rolls and can help revive beleaguered neighborhoods. Gabriel Bomer is a spokesman for Wells Fargo Bank, and they lend to companies that buy tax liens. And he said, budget-challenged cities are using the proceeds from their tax lien sale as an important source of funding. But you see, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way. We could let the Bush tax cuts expire, as any rational person would understand that we must. And we could begin funding our states, cities, and municipalities the way they should be. Because, you know, when those budget cuts came to those sheriff's offices, somebody in the sheriff's tax office lost a job. A lot of somebodies in a sheriff's tax office or a tax collector's office or a county tax office lost their job. That means, of course, that they're not contributing to the local economy anymore. That means, in turn, that maybe they're not able to pay their taxes anymore. Wouldn't it be just a whole lot simpler to let the person keep their daggum job and keep paying their taxes? There's no benefit to this. And here, I'll go back to the ancient history reference for just a minute. It comes to no good end. In the case of ancient Rome, they were required to keep standing armies in the provinces just to keep the locals in line who were being squeezed half to death by the tax farmers. And the armies cost more than it would have cost just to tax people fairly. And lo, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world was to be taxed. Do you remember that? Isn't that in the book of Luke? A lot of people say that was just a census. No. You take a census so that you can impose taxation. For those of you who are especially right-wingers who are into your Bible, you might recall that Matthew, one of the disciples, was a tax farmer. He was a publican, one of the publicani. Because the Roman knight class then went out into the provinces and they did exactly what Bank of America does. They went out into the provinces and hired a guy at a fee, who went down and squeezed out the last drachma, the last sestertius, the last whatever, from even the least among people. And eventually, the whole empire fell to pieces. Now, I know the right-wing religion industry in this country says, well, we're going to fall apart because we don't get back to God. Oh, for heaven's sakes. If this country falls apart, it will fall apart because it ate itself alive. Or more particularly, more accurately, because it allowed its predator corporate class to eat it alive.
You know, just because they dress well doesn't mean that they think well, or that they live well, or that they are honest or upstanding. Why do you think Republicans don't want regulation? Sure, they hide it behind things like, well, business does best when government gets out of the way. But that's an excuse. That's a ruse. That's the kind of fraud that they use to pacify the illiterati of this country. Republicans hate regulations because regulations keep them from robbing us blind. And people know that this tax farming dodge isn't good for America. Frank Alexander is a law professor at Emory University. He said, if your only goal is to maximize your rate of return, this is a nice industry. The question becomes, do you mind being a vulture and preying on people? But it goes further than Professor Alexander says, as I've noted. Because if you begin preying on people, eventually you're preying upon yourself. They're doing it in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, in Cleveland. Robin Thomas is Cuyahoga County's chief deputy treasurer. She says, with the economy the way it is now, we won't have a tax sale for at least a year. She's trying to give homeowners there a little more time to get caught up with their property taxes before the vultures swoop in. This is a long investigative article. It's the kind of a read that doesn't come easy because, among other things, you're sitting there the whole time. Wanting to scream. And yet you read on, and it doesn't get better. And you wonder, who would you go to? Here's a question. As we approach November the 2nd, does anybody think that a Tea Partier like Christine O'Donnell, the COD, C-O-D, that's the COD, does anybody think that the COD would dare stand up in the United States Senate and opine against tax farming in America? Of course she wouldn't. Does anybody think that Rand Paul, if he becomes a senator, will stand up in the Senate and speak up for people being tormented by Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and the like? Of course he won't. Does anybody think that Sharon Angle will stand up in the United States Senate and speak up for some mother, some father, you know, family values, who are being hounded by debts that they don't even owe that have been compounded by the banksters under some the crippled Fawn LLC tax farming collection company? Will Sharon Angle stand up? No. Will Carly Fiorina? No. Of course they won't. Will Pat Toomey? Oh, heck no. Pat Toomey's one of them. Pat Toomey comes from that predatory Wall Street class. He's not even a real Pennsylvanian, for heaven's sakes. And yet they'll complain about taxes and complain about taxes and complain about regulations while American homes are literally drowning in debt. It doesn't matter to them if their constituents' children are sleeping in cars. It doesn't matter to Pat Toomey. It doesn't matter to the rest of the Tea Partiers. Because they have no more interest in American families and the values of American families than a hog has in a Sunday suit. Email coming in from Sandra. She says, if I recall correctly, multiple folks were guillotined for tax farming during the French Revolution. And she's right. Jim noting via email, he said, my God, even one of the 25 points of the Nazi Party in Germany was freedom from interest slavery. Or what Luciano would refer to as vigorish. What happened to them, or have the laws of justice been so transmogrified? Yes, they have. Look, most of this story was taking place in Florida. That's not an accident. Florida is in an absolute funding crisis right now, but we're too busy watching Bristol Palin do the cha-cha to notice. Aren't we? And guess what, Florida? Help ain't on the way. It's not on the way anywhere. In part because the Democrats politic like scared bunnies. And in part because the Tea Party or extremists who have taken over the Republican Party aren't going to tell anybody that they're operating hand in glove with these thugs. Is this as shocking to you as it is to me? It is shocking to me to the conscience. It is not shocking to me to know that American corporations behave this way. Because this is the whirlwind that we reap from having sown the wind since the days of St. Ronald of Raygun. This is what you get when you believe Republicans when they tell you that they're for the little man and that they want to get government off your back. This is what you get. Tax farmers. And, you know, just give it a little while and then we'll see the stories of the bonuses coming out. The boats and the yachts and the jewels and the cash for being the most aggressive tax farmer of the year in Florida. Or maybe it'll expand. Maybe it'll be South Carolina, North Carolina. Maybe it'll make its way into Pennsylvania and New York. Maybe it's already there. I don't know. There are places where property taxes are high and there are places where property taxes are low. You want to see an example of low taxes, low property taxes? Go over to Crooks and Liars. My good friend Matt Osborne posted an article there last week telling America that it can be Alabama too. Alabama has the lowest property taxes in the United States. And every year or so, the schools there that are supposedly educating the next generation of Alabamians, although granted what that might be is open to debate. You know, things like old Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of their dinosaur, that because the earth is less than 6,000 years old. You know, the kind of stuff that fundamentalists like to talk. Look at Alabama. Their school system teeters constantly on the verge of collapse because they've got low property taxes. But you know what? They're merciless in their collection because property taxes are by definition regressive. It is harder for a working stiff to pay property taxes than it is for giant land-holding corporation that holds vast tracts of timber. Do you begin to get the sense that something wicked this way comes? I do. Jim is back with us. Let's bring Jim back to the program. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Thank you, Bob. You know, my God, I certainly know the meaning of the parable or the expression of the Bible, that it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to inherit the kingdom of heaven.
Without a doubt. I was reading this story earlier this evening, and it just floored me. I'm glad I had this extra 3 hours to flesh it out, because I don't know if I would have had time tomorrow by the time the news cycle has moved on. This is a story that people have got to have in front of their faces.
Let me say something about Fiorina, or whatever her name is. Isn't she the one who was the CEO of eBay?
No, she's the one who was CEO of Hewlett-Packard and very nearly drove it into the dirt.
Okay, now which one was the CEO of eBay?
That's Meg Whitman. That's why we call her E-Meg.
Meg Whitman. Have you ever looked at eBay and seen some of the stuff on there?
Oh, sure.
You know, basically, this is an exercise on the Internet of people who have become so desperately driven for cash that they will sell anything. I mean, and this is my personal example. I collect Phoenix glassware. In 1980, I bought a Madonna vase for $150. Today, that vase, by fair market value, is worth 12 times that. But yet,
wow.
Some poor woman I saw was selling the same thing that I had with the original sticker from 1928 for $150. What does that tell you?
It tells me, A, people are desperate for cash. You know, eBay has spawned an entire sub-industry, Jim, of people basically farming estate sales. And, you know, they can pick, if they pick stuff up for pennies on the dollar, they turn it around and they sell it. You know, maybe she got it for 50 cents. To her, $100 is a windfall, right?
I don't know, but I think that this particular person probably knew what she had, but was so driven that she had to just let it go for that, knowing the market out there and things of that nature. What I'm saying is people are being taken unfair advantage of, and it is just dreadful.
It is. That's what I mean, Jim, when I say that this country is being feasted upon by vultures, and in turn has begun to consume itself, sort of like a person who has that MRSA, that flesh eating bacteria you get in the hospital.
Oh, I know.
Where your body literally eats itself.
Necrosis.
Yeah, our body politic is eating itself alive right now, Jim.
Well, the whole thing is, you know, our entire body politic is infected with a type of leprosy or type of financial necrosis.
And do you see that people like the Tea Partiers are the sheep who are being led to the slaughter?
Well, the root word of necrosis is death.
Yes,
that's exactly what I'm saying. And listen, I know you have other things to say, but I wanted to add that. And, you know, that was just a personal experience that I had, that people are being forced to sell things which were once their prized and valued possessions for just pennies on the dollar. And people like Meg Whitman, well, there you are. I don't even want to say the rest of what I'd like to say.
I can't even contemplate that the people of California would be so manifestly ill-informed as to elect that hateful thing, Governor.
And, you know, this has happened in this country before.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's cyclical, and our curse is that our little human lives are too shortened for us to be able to see it coming back around again.
It is such a pity that our history cannot be linear and profit from its mistakes. But it must be cyclical. And on that note, sir,
I've argued before, Jim, that thank you very much.
I've argued before that the Republicans could never have gotten away with 90% of the garbage that they're pumping out there right now, except for the fact that the Depression-era generation is largely dead now.
Well, I think we're about to see another one. I really do. And I don't think any...
Well, there are some people who will profit by it.
...group of alpha agencies is that's... going to be able to solve it.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you very much, and have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. And the thing is, it's not just that the cycles come and the, and we forget between cycles. It's the fact that the cycles happen, and then they happen faster and faster. And yet we still don't learn the lessons. How long did it take after the Great Depression before the Republicans got a foothold again? There wasn't a Republican president between 1933 and 1953. It's 20 years. Oddly enough, that's also the same 20 years in which the American economy rebounded from the Depression, made it through the Second World War, and began to expand again. But our doom is that we forget. You know, I'm talking about ancient Roman tax farmers. It wasn't that long ago that people in Appalachian coal and oil fields were dispossessed of their lands by profit-driven lawyers wandering amongst them and openly questioning the title to their land. That's a heck of a lot nearer in time than ancient Rome was. That's the middle to late 19th century, and we're still paying prices for that. You know what? Maybe that's why certain school systems like to spend more time teaching about Adam and Eve riding their dinosaur to Sunday school. Because the most dangerous kind of citizen, where the investor class and the Wall Street class are concerned, the most terrifying kind of citizen is a citizen who is informed as to history and understands history's meanings. Because then, no matter how many times they show the Bristol Palin doing the can-can on the TV box, your mind keeps drifting back to the fact that you know that you're being had, that you know you're being played. And we are, aren't we? Oh, we are. We are. And I don't think I have ever looked toward a coming election like I do this November 2nd. Because this November 2nd, this isn't an election. This November 2nd is an IQ test. And it is being administered nationally. And the results, unlike most IQ tests, this IQ test will have immediate and grave results. And if the results of this IQ test are turn out to be that the American people are dumber than a bag of homemade stupid, and we get all kinds of tea partiers in office, the repercussions will be hell. Get out your popcorn. You're listening to The Rich Smith Show, live. I'm Bob Kincaid, sitting in for Rich Smith. You know how to reach the program, right? Sure you do. 888-520-RICK, 888-520-7425. We'll be right back.
Changing America for the better.
The Federal Reserve,
which controls America's monetary policy, says it is trying to invigorate job creation in our country by slashing interest rates to the bone. The Fed's move allows big corporations to borrow money for next to nothing so they can expand and start hiring again. Great goal. How's it working out? Well, the first step has gone splendidly, with such giants as DuPont, Hertz, IBM, Microsoft, and PepsiCo rushing to grab the windfall. They've borrowed hundreds of billions of dollars at interest rates of less than 1%. However, there's been quite a stumble on step two of the Fed's plan. Rather than putting this enormous stash of cash to work for America, the corporations are simply squirreling it away for their own enrichment, refusing to spend it on the job expansion that our economy desperately needs. For example, Microsoft, one of the richest corporations on Earth, amassed nearly $5 billion under this opportunistic borrowing scheme, yet has put none of the cheap money into job creation. Instead, it's using a big chunk of it to buy back stock from its own shareholders, a move that merely profits the handful of rich elites who control Microsoft. Worse, such corporate powers as Hertz and PepsiCo are using the funds to take over competitors. These consolidations will actually cut jobs while reducing consumer choices and raising our prices. Indeed, there's no provision in the Fed's program to keep the giants from investing the money in foreign expansion, thus offshoring more American jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, and there's the rub in nearly all of Washington's indirect job creation efforts. Government officials blithely dole out billions and even trillions to corporations and banks with no strings attached. So the big shots and bastards gleefully grab the money and run.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Hello, I'm David Philman, executive director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know,
together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation.
Man, it's that conscience that'll get you every time, isn't it? I'm Bob Kincaid, sitting in for Rick Smith this evening. As Rick is out doing Rick Smith stuff, he will be back tomorrow evening, Wednesday evening, right on time and regularly scheduled. Now, we've been talking about some fairly serious, heady stuff this evening, right? Sure. Well, I just ran over to the CNN website, just because when we're talking about all this serious stuff, it's always fun to see what the for-profit media are out there offering up as pablum. I don't have the stomach, and you don't want to hear me vomiting on the air, so I won't go to the Fox Radio Rwanda site. But I just went over to CNN. You know what their lead story is? Hint, it has nothing to do with tax farming or tormenting the people in dire straits in America. No, their lead story right now is, Yoko Ono, I was an easy scapegoat. Well, fascinating, sure, why not? The lead story? Don't miss, okay, maybe we got something of substance here. In the for-profit media. Don't miss, NFL lays out huge fines for helmet hits. Mm-hmm, not so much. Don't miss Should Teachers Friend Students. Don't miss FAA 747 wasn't that close to Golden Gate. Still, no, nothing there. Don't miss Tom Bosley of Happy Days, dead at 83. Well, darn, that's sad. Nice long life, I hope he had, Mr. C. Don't miss Khloe Kardashian outs her celeb bully. Don't miss New York gubernatorial debate or comedy show. Don't miss Five Things I'm Sorry to Leave Behind. Don't miss Android backers fire back at Steve Jobs. And then one story that might have, maybe, just sort of, kind of, but not really, wouldn't bet on it. Don't miss Dems try to energize women unions. Really? In the year of the Tea Partier, women and unions need to be energized? I just came here from a different planet to pay no attention to me. Let's see. Margaret Thatcher hospitalized. Well, gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Good grief. Is there no real news anywhere? I reckon not. But I said earlier that I could prove that the Tea Partiers are, you know, atme ute aitbre if you one what I inne. I said it that way so they wouldn't know I was talking bad about them. Again, a story from the Washington Post from a couple of days back, from October 10th, as a matter of fact. Americans have a more, polling data. Americans have a more negative view of government today than they did a decade ago or even a few years ago. Okay. Well, why do you suppose that is? Well, we've had St. Ronnie of Reagan and George Carlisle Group H.W. Bush, then 8 years of relative sanity under Bill Clinton, and then 8 years of torment, pain, misery, death, and hell on earth under George W. Bush. And all of those Republicans that I've mentioned spent the entirety of their time in office talking about how bad government is. Can you imagine that? I went to school in a time, and I'm not quite 50 yet. I went to school in a time when I was taught to think that government is good, that the government is actually we the people, and that America was a good place to live. Now I live in a time where the Republican Party spends all of its time talking about how bad our government is, talking trash on our government, talking stuff that my third grade teacher would have grabbed John Boehner by the ear and dragged him out into the hallway and paddled his butt red over. It's disgusting to me to hear how the Republican Party talks about my country, about what we can't do, about what we're too inept to do. Kind of broke my heart the other day. I was over at alternet.org, and I read a fascinating story. It was an interview with an author. Why Germany has it so good and why America is going down the drain. Shh. Don't tell the Tea Partiers, but the Germans really do have it pretty good. You know, civilization and everything. Good paying jobs. The number one economy on the planet, no matter what anybody says about China. Somewhere between 5 and 9 weeks of paid vacation per year. Healthcare from cradle to grave, good schools that teach multiple languages, excellent universities. Yeah, don't tell the Tea Partiers. And that galls me. That galls me. Because this is supposed to be America, the best country in the world. The Washington Post article I cited noting that general anti-Washington sentiment is helping to fuel a potential Republican takeover of Congress next month. Here's the fun part. This is the part where America can't pass an IQ test. Remember I told you, November 2nd, it's an IQ test. It's not an election. Ask people what they expect the government to do for themselves and their families, and a more complicated picture emerges from the polling data. Most Americans who say they want more limited government also call Social Security and Medicare very important. They want Washington to be involved in schools and to help reduce poverty. And nearly half want the government to maintain a role in regulating health care of some sort. The gap between Democrats and Republicans is wide over a decade of the hate and poison that the right has poured into the ears of the American people. 80% of Republicans say that the government's priorities are misplaced. How? Oh, that's that Tea Party swill that they keep talking about, how government needs to get out of the way of business. Well, we just went over that. I don't think that holds much water. Washington was a C student in a poll 10 years ago. Today, more than 4 in 10 people, more than 40%, give the government a D or an F. Well, this is what happens when you spend a generation telling the American people that government is a problem and not a solution to problems. Representative democracy is a response to the fact that the framers of this country didn't want a monarchy. Because that was really the going government of the day. But we had this notion that maybe we could govern ourselves without some king or someone who needed his ring kissed on a fairly regular basis. Right? Well, that's all gone now. After a generation of telling the American people that government, that their own government is bad. And let me reemphasize that. The Republican Party has spent a generation engaging in sedition. What government do they want to replace this government with? Well, if you listen to them talk at their little Tea Party and rallies, if you listen to their stupid little political commercials, here's a hint. Haiti. Somalia. Because those are places with little or no government, limited government, and no government intrusion in the world of business. Hey, Mr. Tea Partier, toddling in your semi up I-81. Do you want to live in Haiti? Do you want to live in Somalia? You keep voting Republican, buddy. And don't you dare blame the liberals when the tax farmers come for your house because you ain't got no job no more. Don't you dare. Here's some more fun from the study, though. 55% of Americans say the government isn't paying attention to the biggest issues. But a similar percentage says the government doesn't use tax money wisely, that they're out of sync with their values and hasn't helped their families. Half of respondents say that the government has a big effect on their daily lives. But most of those people say that it's a negative effect. Norma Osuna is 48 years old and was a follow-up interviewee to the survey. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she's afraid that America is going down in the road of a socialistic direction. Norma Osuna couldn't define socialism if her life depended on it, and yet at the same time she says, I think the less the government governs us, the better we do. Really, Norma? You're really tired of that clean drinking water?
from that government governing? You're really tired of driving on roads that don't wreck the suspension of your rattle-trap vehicle because of government regulation in creating the highway system? Really, Norma? But that's what they say. Because that's what they've been told in between episodes of Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire's Nose, the American Idolatry, and Bristol Palin doing the can-can panty flash. I guess Norma hates that socialized military that's out there fighting and bleeding and dying in a stupid, needless war in Afghanistan, too. Shh. Don't tell the Tea Partiers, that the military is a socialist institution. Because it is. You don't want to tell the Tea Partiers this, because then their head, it's just like when Slim Whitman sings and when Mars Attacks, their little heads just inflate and they explode. Because of all the cognitive dissonance banging around inside their otherwise the rattlesome little noggins. I want the government to get out of my life, except for the Medicare part. Bang. I want the government to get out of my life, but I want to keep getting my Social Security check. Bang. Does it make your eyeballs ache the way it does mine? I want government services, but I don't want government. That's just a little too much, isn't it? Because here's a fun paragraph. Even as Americans generally hold Washington in low regard, they still like much of the work it does. Support for government action on such issues as national defense, health care, and fighting poverty remains high. In some cases, in the same place it was a decade ago. Almost 60% of people surveyed said they want their congressional representatives to fight for additional government spending in their districts to create job creation, or spur job creation. That takes in a whole bunch of Tea Partiers. Americans continue to see major areas of government spending as essential, whether it's Medicare, Social Security, National Defense, food stamps, education, unemployment benefits, or environmental protection. About 90% of the American people call these programs at least somewhat important. Welcome to the Idiocracy. There is some hopeful news. Our buddy Spike writing in. That Joe Sestak has taken the lead in Pennsylvania, which is hopeful. Spike says, it seems while Toomey and his friends with the U.S. Chamber and Club for Growth get more and more sleazy, Admiral Sestak has taken the lead. Another poll from a college I never heard of last week. Is that kind of like the sweatshirt that John Belushi wore in Animal House, just at college? Another poll, Spike says, from a college I never heard of last week said it was Toomey 41%, Sestak 47%. This latest poll seems to reaffirm that, just like the race versus Specter, a huge surge in the last 2 weeks. You know, I'm going to be mighty proud to share a common border with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania if you guys can manage to elect Joe Sestak. Because if you elect Pat Toomey, well, there's a problem. It means you failed the IQ test. It means that we're going to have to collectively pass out house helmets and elbow pads and knee pads for the majority of voters in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And, you know, everybody will have to be equipped with those little round-edged scissors that you get in kindergarten so you can't hurt yourselves, because should you elect Pat Toomey, it will be a pretty clear indication that you can't be trusted on your own. This new poll says that Joe Sestak now leads Pat Toomey 44% to 41% with 15% undecided. Oh, dear God, the undecided voters. They scare me to death. I mean, it's October the 19th, people. If you're still an undecided voter, there is something desperately wrong with you. What are you waiting for? God?
Mary Ellen, Mary Ellen, thou shalt vote for...
Here, let me help.
Thou shalt vote for Joe Sestak.
See, that's a pretty good God voice. Hopefully you're not undecided anymore. Undecided on October the 19th? When you know that Pat Toomey wants to give away everything you've got to his pals on Wall Street? And there's 15% in Pennsylvania undecided? That's the 15% of Pennsylvania that can't figure out what to have for lunch at a quarter to noon. That's the 15% of Pennsylvanians who aren't sure when they pull up to the pumps whether or not they want unleaded. Hint, it's all unleaded. That's the 15% of Pennsylvanians who don't have the common sense not to come in out of the rain. Independence, undecideds, please. This is, it says, in May, the same tracking poll was the first to show Sestak catching and eventually surpassing U.S. Senator Arlen Specter. The tracking poll shows who's ahead and by how much each day until the election. Whew. Now, this is, and understand something. I'm a liberal. Really, not kidding. And a mean one at that. Don't much like Republicans. And I'll tell you this as a liberal. I don't expect Joe Sestak to be a liberal senator. I expect him to be, I mean, for God's sakes, you do not come out of the United States Navy after having been an admiral and driven aircraft carriers around the planet as a liberal. It is functionally impossible. He's going to be nice and staid and centrist. But he's not going to be one of those just bug-eyed, crazy right-wingers who runs around half the time handling snakes and speaking in tongues like Jim DeMitted, Tom Coburn, Inhofe, the Sessions from Alabama, or that chinless wonder Mitch McConnell from Kentucky. He'll be nice and sane. And you know what? In 2010 America, I have extremely diminished political expectations. Sane would thrill me to pieces. I've met Joe Sestak. He's sane. He's not crazy like the Pat Toomey. Remember, Pat Toomey has a fetus fetish. Pat Toomey is terribly, terribly, terribly concerned about all the little unborn babies until they're born. Then they're on their own, which is a heck of a note to say to a, you know, one-hour-old. That's it, kid. Good luck. Here's your apple and your roadmap. Be happy. I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't understand how that race could be this close, but I guess it is. and it's this close because the Republicans are so much better than the Democrats are on their best day. The Republicans are so much better at feeding a line of unmitigated stuff to people who know that they will vote for anything as long as it's wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross. You better watch out. That flag can be thrown over your head and you can be bludgeoned to death with the cross. Yeah, Jim noting by email, monarchy? I don't want monarchy. Oligarchy is what they want. Because you see, that's the trick. These banksters from Wall Street and the silk stocking banking firms, the J.P. Morgan Chases, the Goldman Sachs, the Bank of Americas, they're oligarchs. They're the top of the heap. There is a class war in America, as Warren Buffett often says, and their side is winning. Just a note to say that I've really, really enjoyed my time here this evening. I look forward to getting to do it again. Rick Smith, I hope you had fun this evening. If you're at all curious, feel free. You know what's really fun? 6 hours. 3 hours of me and 3 hours of Rick Smith. Makes for a great evening. Why don't you try it out? Start out with from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at headonradionetwork.com. And join me for what we call 3 hours of cussing and discussing. And then just keep things rolling. And check out, or stay with Rick Smith all the way up to midnight. By the way, you can get the horn a lot of different ways. You can get it on various players on your smartphones now. You can get it on the internet. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is the address for finding it. And thanks to Jim and Sandra both for their calls and their trenchant commentary. It made this a whole lot more interesting, I hope, for everyone and not just me. So I guess we're pretty much at the get the heck out of here part. You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show live, not only over the airwaves in Pennsylvania, but live to the entire world. How does that make you feel, Pennsylvania? Yeah, feel pretty good about yourself right now, don't you? Mm-hmm. Happens every night, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. to midnight. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's been my pleasure. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Peace.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Having anyone in elected office who vaguely even has a passing familiarity